Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Mark Moss Show, where we're talking about Bitcoin and the decentralized revolution that we are living in right now, we're witnessing right now. Thanks for joining in. I'm here on this same channel at this same time each and every week, so make sure to go ahead and set a calendar reminder to join me. Try to make it the most profitable, the most important, the most important part of your week, trying to bring you the latest information on what's happening. Now, I try to bring you the education that you need to understand what's going on. I try to bring you the latest, greatest breaking news each and every weekend so you can stay up to date on the progress of the market. And then I bring to you some of my friends to kind of give you some perspective and share with you what is going on. Now, one of the things I don't talk about a whole lot is the price of Bitcoin. In my opinion, the price of Bitcoin is one of the least interesting things about it. I mean, we're literally witnessing a brand new technology that's changing the world, and sharing, looking at the price doesn't give you any of that information. All it is just a basic number. But starting with the price, we can see that if you've been paying attention, we are down, meaning that Bitcoin used to be worth more US dollars than it is today. But that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing in my opinion. Not that it's off of its high. That's not what the good thing is. It's where it's at today. So like I said, I don't spend a lot of time talking about the price, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the price right now. But what I do like to do in regards to the price is I like to gain perspective on things. All right. And so if we want to gain some perspective on things, we can see that a year ago, we were at about $30,000. Just 6 months before that, we were at like 10,000. So we went from like 10,000 to 30,000 a year ago. So we're at about 43,000 a day. We're at 30,000 a year ago. That's better than most other assets did over the last year. But we went from about 30,000, and then we did shoot up to a high of, we got up to about 42,000 in April. And actually, we got up to 65,000, I should say, actually, in April, sorry, 65,000. And then the market crashed, and then the price came down. And we sat in for about 70 days in this range where Bitcoin traded in this like $30,000 range. And so that's the key piece that I want to bring in. So we shot from like 10,000 to 65,000. It was an amazing run. And then the price pulled all the way back to about 30,000 and sat there for about 2.5 months. And this is the key piece I want to draw your attention to. So we kind of consolidated around this 30,000 price, and then it shot up again. And this time it passed the previous all-time high of 65 and got to 69. And now it's pulled back, and we're at about 43 right now. So it's consolidating around the $40,000 price range. And so what we're looking at is we pulled back and consolidated a floor around the $30,000 price range. We shot higher and this time pulled back, and we're consolidating around a $40,000 price floor. And so what you're looking at is you're looking at higher lows. And so it's building support at those levels. So don't look at where it's off from the high. Look at how much progress it's making off of the lows. So I think that's the key piece there. But what I tell you each and every week, and why I try to bring to you the latest breaking news, is that the price is one of the least interesting things. And the reason why is when you're looking at a new technology, the price isn't what's important. What's important when you're looking at new technology is two things. One, the growth of the network. Is the network growing? Are more people using it? Are more options to use it growing? It's kind of Metcalfe's law. The bigger the network gets, the more valuable it is. And the second thing is we're looking at is what is the development happening on the network? Is it growing? Is it evolving, et cetera? And so that's what I try to focus on, and I try to bring to you each and every week. And man, every week there is a lot going on. So if you ignore the price and you look at the growth and the development on the network, you will start to see a completely different thing. The price will get there, okay? The price will get there. If you zoom out, have a long-time perspective, the price is going to get there. But some of the big things that are happening, of course, one of the biggest news stories of 2021, one that I was super excited for, is that a country of El Salvador actually adopted Bitcoin as legal tender. Now, A lot of people ask themselves, you know, is the dollar going to die? Will the dollar lose the reserve currency status? What's the next reserve currency? Will it be the Chinese yuan? Will it be gold? Will we go back to gold? Will it be a CBDC, et cetera, right? The problem is, I think, is they're looking for a centralized answer, but the future is decentralized. And so what I mean by that is that my reserve asset is Bitcoin. For me, I don't care what yours is. Mine is Bitcoin. For S&P 500, you know, publicly traded companies like MicroStrategy, their reserve asset is also Bitcoin. Now, it may not be true for every publicly traded company, and it's not, but it's true for them. And then we have countries like El Salvador who have also made it theirs as well. And so the future is decentralized. Now, you have the right, you have the freedom to choose what you want to be your reserve asset. And so you don't have to use Bitcoin. You don't have to buy any. But what I would tell you is that what you choose to store your wealth in matters. Now, the reason why I bring up El Salvador is because it's game theory. Game theory is kind of like the game of musical chairs, if you remember playing that as a kid. You walk round and round and round until the music stops, and hopefully you're one of the people that gets the chair. So the last person there loses. And so El Salvador was the first nation, and President Bukele of El Salvador, he put out on Twitter, I think he said that he predicted, I forget, two or three more countries would come to Bitcoin this year in 2022. And here we go. Here we go. So this week we saw a small nation. It's not a big one, but doesn't matter. The small nation of Tonga put together a bill through their parliament that basically copied almost identically the El Salvador bill to make Bitcoin legal tender there. So it's another domino that's ready to fall down. Lord Fusita, he's a former member of parliament for Tonga. He released this statement for Bitcoin becoming legal tender in Tonga, like I said, copying El Salvador's playbook. And they said that they could onboard more than 100,000 Tongans onto the Bitcoin network. So, you know, it's not billions or hundreds of millions, but still, it's another nation. He put together a kind of a five-point plan, which is basically, you know, kind of all happening this year. It goes to Parliament, they vote on it, they have a couple weeks to kind of figure it out, and then what the date will be. Now, some of you listening might go, why the heck does it matter? You know, who cares if a country does it? Or even more, why? Why would a country want to do that? Remember, why? Well, one thing you have to understand is that for most of the countries around the world, they bring an inordinate amount of income based off of remittances. And so people leave their country, they go work in another country, and they have to send money back home. And so that's what happens in El Salvador, but happens all over the place. Now, Tonga receives more income from remittances than any other country in the world. So 30% of household income in Tonga is made up of remittances, which is a lot. But the problem is that those remittances, typically sent over Western Union, things like that, they're very expensive to use. As a matter of fact, depending on the amount you're sending, you could spend anywhere up to 30% of the amount of money sent is spent in fees. And so if 30% of your income, or 30% of the income in the country of Tonga is coming from remittances, and 30% of that is fees, that's a lot of money. That's pretty bad. And by sending it via Bitcoin, you can do it for free. For free. So imagine if you personally were able to increase your income by 30%, what that would do to you. And remember, about 30% of household income is made up of remittances, and they can save 30% on fees. That is a massive, massive movement. According to the World Bank, Tonga's remittance as a percentage of gross domestic product is substantially higher than El Salvador at 39% versus 24% respectively. So that's another. Oh, and it says smartphone penetration exceeds 90% in Tonga. So they're ready to go. It's another shoe to drop. Game theory is in play. Who's going to be the next country? I'm interested to find out. I can't wait to see. You're listening to the Mark Moss Show. We're talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about the decentralized movement that's sweeping the world right now. We're talking about the second country that just is working to adopt it as legal currency. I have even more news coming. Do not go away. I'll be right back. All right, welcome back. You are listening to the Mark Moss Show, and we are talking about Bitcoin. What else would I be talking about? We're talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about this decentralized revolution that is sweeping the world. And we're talking about the most important things with Bitcoin, which are not the price, but are rather we're talking about the network growth and the development that's happening on the network. Those are the two things that you should be looking at when you're looking at new technologies. The price will get there, all right? The price will take care of itself. But is the network growing and is it developing? And so before the break, I was talking about how the second country in the world now is working on adopting Bitcoin as a legal tender. That's the nation of Tonga. I won't go back through that. But that is big news. Not so much because Tonga is such a big country, more because it's another country. So it's not the size of the country. It's that it is another country. And game theory is in order. And I think, you know, a second country does it, and then a third country and a fourth. And next thing you know, it starts happening pretty quickly. So that was one big news. And there's lots of other things that are being done to continue to push this. I saw just here in the United States, as a matter of fact, and you might be interested in this, actually. So here in the United States, we saw in Northwest Arkansas, Northwest Arkansas is offering $10,000 in Bitcoin and a free bike if you relocate there. Wow. So Northwest Arkansas hopes to lure remote tech workers and entrepreneurs to the region by offering them $10,000 worth of Bitcoin and a bicycle. Northwest Arkansas is one of the fastest growing regions in the country, and we're now seeing more explosive growth in our tech sector, which is pretty cool. So, you know, one thing that's going to reshape the world, it already is that the internet has changed the way that we work. And not only the way that we work, but where we work. And so, you know, you used to have to work, if you wanted to make money, you had to be in the United States. That's where the whole economy was. And not just in the United States, you had to be in a city, right? So you had to be in a big city. That's where all the jobs were. But the internet has started to break that apart, and now you can basically live anywhere you want as long as you have an internet connection. And of course, the pandemic really kicked that into high gear. A lot of people who thought they could never work online were now forced to, and they found out they like it. A lot of businesses who thought they could never have a remote staff were forced to, and they found out they like it as well. And so it really kickstarted this. And what we're seeing is we're going to see this massive trend, this massive reshuffle of not just the country, but the world. So all through the United States, we have people moving to Idaho or Montana or Wyoming or Kansas or wherever they want, because now for the first time ever, people can actually live where they want to live as opposed to living where they have to work. And so this doesn't just change the way the United States is made up. This changes the way the world is made up, because now I don't just have to live in the United States. I can go live in El Salvador, I can go live in Tonga, or I can go live in Mexico or wherever I want to. I know I have a little brother. He recently moved to Missouri from California. And the reason why is because, one, he works on the internet. It doesn't matter where he lives. And two, he was able to buy, I think, a 4-bedroom house on like a really big lot with a big grassy yard. And his payment is $500 a month. $500 a month. And he has all the same things. He has all the, you know, he has a gym and he has the restaurants and he has the stores. He has everything he needs. He's just in Missouri. But what does he care? Because all he needs is access to the internet and he's fine. And so a lot of people should actually probably think about this. And so anyway, this goes back to Arkansas. The expanded incentive offer, Bitcoin and a bike, not only embraces the growing trend towards the use of cryptocurrency as a payment option by employers, but also helps increase our pipeline of talent to benefit tech employers, startups, cities, local businesses, and the region overall, end quote. So, I mean, again, we can see how cities like Miami are adopting like this Bitcoin standard and saying that people could pay their fees in Bitcoin. The city managers are asking to get paid in Bitcoin. And now we have cities not just saying you can pay your fees in Bitcoin, but they're literally incentivizing people to move into the area by giving them Bitcoin. It says here, if you're interested, you get a street or a mountain bike to explore the outdoors. And it says potential transplants must be able to relocate to Northwest Arkansas within 6 months of acceptance, sign a lease for local housing, or purchase a house, be at least 24 years old, and have a full-time remote employment. So if you work on the internet and you can live anywhere you want, you can move to Arkansas and get $10,000 worth of Bitcoin. Now, if Bitcoin does what we think it can do in 5 years, that could be a lot of money, and you could be living a good life in Arkansas. So interesting. Again, the network is growing. I like that one. We also saw, you know, a lot of people talking about I last week I talked about FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. All these reasons why people don't like Bitcoin.
It's too expensive. The government's going to make it illegal. It's too slow. On and on and on.
And there's no shortage of those. I shot down, I don't know, 10 of them last week, I think. Go back and check out that past issue. You can just search Mark Moss iHeart or Mark Moss podcast, and you'll find that. But one of the things that I do is I try to always keep in mind that I'm not the smartest person in the world. And so what I want to do is I want to look at and see what other smart people are doing. As a matter of fact, I don't want to be the smartest person in a deal, in a room. And so I've been doing private deal investing for a really long time, most of my career. I think when I look at these private deals, typically late stage venture or pre-IPO, one of my things that I look at is who else is in on the deal. Are there other smart people in on the deal? And if so, that gives me a level of confidence that, like, hey, I'm not alone on this. I'm not an idiot. Like, these other smart people like it as well. And so a lot of people don't like Bitcoin, or they have their reasons why they doubt it, which is fine, and you should doubt it. But look at the smart people that are in on the deal. So this week, we found out another one. There's lots and lots and lots of them. But this week, we saw billionaire investor Bill Miller now has 50% of his personal wealth in Bitcoin. Now, I'm talking about a billionaire investor, 50% of his personal wealth in Bitcoin. And that's a lot. It says, and the reason why Bill Miller is famous is because he's been able to beat the S&P 500 index for a record-breaking 15 years in a row, from 1991 to 2005. That's a pretty big deal. So typically you, let me tell you how big of a deal that is. So this year, 2021, the S&P 500, or it's last year now, 2021, the S&P 500 broke records. It was one of the best years ever. And out of all the top hedge funds in Wall Street, only three of them were able to outperform. Out of hundreds, only three were able to outperform what the S&P 500 did. He did it for 15 years in a row. It's a pretty big deal. Now, another caveat to that is that while only three Wall Street hedge funds were able to do that, there were 35 members of Congress that were able to do that. So only three out of all the best hedge funds, out of the smartest traders, smartest investors in the world, only three of them could beat it, but 35 Congress people beat it. It's pretty interesting. It's almost like you would think they might have some insider information. But anyway, that's a different subject. So anyway, Bill Miller, like I said, only three people could beat it. He did it for 15 years in a row. He's not an idiot. He's a pretty smart guy. And he says that he's so bullish on Bitcoin, and his investments tied closely to the crypto represent 50% of his personal assets. I'm going to tell you about what he bought and what his recommendation is for you. So don't go away, because you want to hear what his recommendation is for you in regards to the asset. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'll be right back. All right, welcome back. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show, and we are talking about Bitcoin, of course. Like you didn't know. We're talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. Today, we're talking about right now some of the latest breaking news of the weekend. And I was talking about one of the most successful investors in the world, and what he's doing. His name is Bill Miller. And when I say one of the most successful investors in the world, he famously beat the S&P 500 index for 15 years in a row. And I was saying how this last year, 2021, the markets were crazy. And of all the hedge funds, all of Wall Street, there was only three out of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, or however many there are, only three were able to beat the S&P 500. He did it for 15 years in a row. So he's pretty smart. So no matter how smart you are in investing, you're probably not smarter than him. I'm not. And so when I look at someone like him, I tend to listen. And so he said that he has 50% of his money into Bitcoin. Now, but that doesn't mean that you should. Let's hear what he has to say here. So he said that he started buying some early on, but then he didn't buy any for a really long time until last year. He said last year when he saw the price hit new highs and then it started to fall sharply, he thought that was a good time to buy the dip. So what happens is whenever the price makes new all-time highs, everybody wants to start buying. Friends I haven't talked to in years all of a sudden start messaging me and saying, should I buy? It was like, it's the top of the market. And they say, should I wait for a dip? And then as soon as the dip comes, nobody wants to buy. So Bitcoin was at 69,000. Now it's at whatever, 42, 43,000. And people are afraid to buy. Everyone thinks they want to buy the dip until we're in the dip, but that's exactly what he did. He saw when it hit new highs and then it started to fall sharply. He thought that was a good time to buy the dip. So he did. He started buying again at $30,000 after it had fallen off of the $65,000 high. He said the reason was that there were a lot more people using it, not to mention that venture capitalists and others were investing into it. Miller said he thinks Bitcoin is best thought of as a digital gold, or as what he's saying, a store of value. He says that he's only recently allowed himself to be called a Bitcoin bull rather than just a Bitcoin observer, because he feels that it's now developed into a game-changing technology. So what I would ask you to do is, whatever biases you have in your mind, just put those aside. Here's somebody who's very successful, and you can see his line of thinking. Now, does this mean that you should put 50% of your money into Bitcoin like he did? No, it definitely doesn't. So let me explain what he says that you should do. So he says, despite his own heavily concentrated position, Miller's advice for the average investor is to put only 1% of your net worth in Bitcoin, reasoning that if you put 1% of your portfolio in it for diversification, even if it goes to zero, which I think is highly improbable, I'm reading his quote, but of course it's possible, you can always afford to lose 1%, end quote. So that's what he said. So you might have heard, only invest what you're willing to lose, kind of a thing. So he's like, hey, put 1%. If you lose 1%, you're not even going to notice it, right? But if it goes up to where we think it is, that could be life-changing. Now, that's his advice. Of course, I am not giving you advice. This is not financial advice. But he has 50% of his portfolio in there. And so listen what he says, but also look at what he does, and you make up your own mind. Think about the risk-return profile for you. Now, a lot of people, myself included, don't really look at Bitcoin as an investment. I look at it more of a savings. So I'm not trying to put it in there to make a bunch of money. I'm trying to put it in there to preserve a bunch of money, to save a bunch of money. And so instead of putting money in there that you can afford to lose, I'm putting money in there that I can't afford to lose. It's a different way around. He went on to say, quote, I think the average investor should ask himself or herself, what do you have in your portfolio that has that kind of track record? Number one is very, very underpenetrated, can provide a service of insurance against financial catastrophe that no one else can provide, and can go up 10 to 50 times. The answer is nothing, end quote. That's what he said, not me. Now, I would say the same thing, but I'm reading to him. I'm reading to him because he's one of the most successful investors in the world, 15 years beating the S&P 500. That's what he says. What do you have in your portfolio that has that kind of track record? Is very underpenetrated, can provide a service of insurance against financial catastrophe. Remember I was saying, you can look at it like putting money in you can afford to lose, or I say put money in I can't afford to lose, and that's what he says, right? Is a service or insurance against financial catastrophe, and it can go up 10 to 50 times. So you can be an investment or insurance. It can be both. I like those odds. I like those odds a lot. What do you think? I love it when you guys send me tweets. I'm pretty active on Twitter. The number one Mark Moss. That's just the number one, the numero uno one Mark Moss. Send me a message. Tell me you heard me on the radio. I'd love to hear from you. Love to answer your questions live. Another big piece of news that broke this week that I'm actually super excited for, I think is amazing. I've talked about a couple times before on the show, and that is the Twitter founder and CEO Jack Dorsey, who's no longer the CEO of Twitter anymore as of a few weeks ago. Dorsey has left Twitter, and he's also still running Square, which is the payment company. And he left, he's famously told us that he left Twitter to focus on Bitcoin. That's his goal. I want to focus on Bitcoin. And not only that, he changed the name of Square to Block because he wants to focus on Bitcoin. And he just said that he thinks there's nothing more important in his life to work on than Bitcoin. And again, back to smarter people than me. We have Bill Miller, one of the best investors in the world. And now we have Jack Dorsey, one of the best creators, wealth creators in the world. And when they say these things, I tend to listen. And he has been putting his money where his mouth is, so to speak. And he has been building up Bitcoin services. And one of the things he did this week, which I thought was amazing, is that he started a fund to defend Bitcoin developers. So remember, what are the two things we're supposed to be looking at? Repeat them back to me. They are one, growth of the network, and two, development on the network. And the problem is that we have a bunch of developers, Bitcoin developers, that have been getting attacked. There's some jerk, we'll call him that for the radio-friendly people out there. This jerk, Craig Wright, pretends that he is he's the real Satoshi Nakamoto. Of course, he's got no evidence to back this up, but he's got a bunch of money, and he's happy to file lawsuits. And so this guy, Craig Wright, has been starting to file a bunch of lawsuits against various Bitcoin developers. And the problem is these Bitcoin developers don't make a bunch of money, and they can't afford a bunch of lawsuits. And so a lot of the developers have been disappearing. They've been going into hiding. They don't want to get sued. They don't have the money for it. And remember, the growth of the network depends on the development happening. And if the developers disappear, what happens to the network? And so Jack Dorsey stepped up and created a legal defense fund for Bitcoin developers as the community faces, quote, multi-front litigation and threats that have forced some with legal support to capitulate, end quote. And so Jack Dorsey, along with Chaincode Labs co-founder Alex Marcos and academic Martin White, founded this Bitcoin Defense Fund board to fund these developers and help them fight back against these legal bills, which is amazing because, as I said, we want to continue to have the development and we need to keep them on board. I love to see someone like Dorsey leave traditional mainstream social media, whatever, and go work on something he finds to be much more powerful, much more important. Really a lesson for all of us. I say over and over and over, build the world that we want. And so too many of us are thinking that we're victims in this world and we don't like the way things are going. I don't like the medical system. I don't like the education system. I don't like the financial system, whatever it is. But instead of focusing on the bad things that you don't want, focus on what you do want. Go build the world that you want. Follow an example of Jack Dorsey. And it starts with the money, unlocking the money. When I come back, I have some more late breaking news to keep you in the know. I'll be right back with more. Don't go away. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Maw Show. We're talking about Bitcoin and we're talking about this decentralized revolution. And I'm talking about the latest breaking news of the weekend. Now, one of the most important things in life is just your education. I mean, it's really at the foundation of everything. Your diet, how to get ahead in business, how to invest, how to get along with other people, how to manage your time. It all comes down to education and, of course, where you focus that education on. And Bitcoin is it's a technological revolution. It's the largest shift in humanity that we'll witness in our lifetimes. And with that shift, I mean, it's going to change the world. It also presents massive opportunity with the wealth transfer that's happening. It has already begun happening and will continue happening. And in order to take advantage of that, in order to be positioned properly, you have to have the education for that. And so I'm trying to bring you the latest up-to-date information for that. Now, as I say each and every week, it's not the price that we should be paying attention to on brand new technology. We want to focus on the growth of the network, and we also want to focus on the development. So that's what we talked about. But some of the other things that we also have to know is why. Why do we need that? Why is it important? Why do I care about it? And things like that. Now, this week we saw record-breaking inflation. We saw the CPI, the CPI, as I like to call it, but the CPI, which is the consumer price inflation, or index, I should say. And basically what it does is the Fed, the BLS, actually, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, gets a basket of goods and they price them. So let's say you go grocery shopping and you put a little bit of steak and you put a little bit of milk and you put a little bit of cheese and you put a little bit of whatever, and they measure how much that costs. And then throughout time, they track that same basket. Couple problems with that. One is that they change the basket all the time. They're constantly changing the basket. That's a big problem. And of course, they change the basket to show the number that they want to show. So for example, they do something called a substitution rule. So steak has become too expensive. So now we're going to take steak out and let's put hamburger meat in instead. So you can still buy quote unquote meat, although it used to be prime rib or filet, and now you get hamburger meat. Or why don't we just get hamburger meat out and let's just put ground turkey meat in instead. And so they do this substitution thing. And so that's a big scam. Another thing that they do is they don't look at the price of the home, for example. They use something called like rent equivalence. And so homes went, you know, up 35%. But they say, well, but it's not the price of the home. It's how much the homeowner could rent the price of the, or rent the home out for. And so they use this like rent equivalence. Now, if we go back to the way they measured CPI back in the 1980s, so there was a big change in the 1980s. There was a big change in the 1990s as well. But they told us that the inflation is 7%, which is the highest it's been in four decades. And really, it's the highest ever. But if we went back and we readjusted it for the way they used to calculate it back, remember how they changed the basket. If we go back to the original basket from about about 1980s, we'd see that we're well over 15% with inflation. But again, as I went through a few hours ago talking about inflation can't really be measured by a number. So the price of homes on Lake Travis outside of Austin have gone up over 100%. So how does that 15% or the 7% inflation fit that? It doesn't, right? Steak's gone up 24%. Used cars have gone up, I think, 39%. The average median home in the U.S. has gone up 35%. So where do they come up with 7%? Like, how is inflation 7% when all the things I'm buying, gas for my truck, steak for my grill, and a new house for my family, all the things I'm buying went up all over 30%. So how are they telling me it went up by 7%? And you get kind of the absurdity of that. One thing that, back to kind of this, the CPI lie, this kind of the CPI basket is that they have this like rent equivalence kind of thing, as I was talking about. And one of the things that they get you on is not the price of the home, but it's the rent, right? And so what it does in this basket, it has certain weighting. So it says like, you should spend, the average person should spend 25% of their income towards housing, which I don't know where they came up with that because it's probably way higher than that, up to probably 40%. But basically, they weight the owner's equivalent of rent, that's what it's called it, as 25% of the core CPI weighting. Now, that's a lot of things to say there. So first of all, what is core CPI? So on the CPI, they remove food and energy, which is funny because that's the two things that we have to live. Without energy and food, how do we live? We don't. But they remove those because, of course, they're going up way too high. So that's what the core is. The core is removing those things. But anyway, so the owner's equivalent of rent, not the cost of the home, but how much they can rent out for, is 25% of the weighting. And that core weighting only increased to 3.8% in January of 2022 from 2.4% for all of 2021. Now, does anybody think that the rents of homes only went up by 2 or 3%? Yeah, I didn't think so. As a matter of fact, it depends, right? It depends on where you live. So some areas went up way faster than others. I can tell you where I've been living last year in Puerto Rico, most of the rent prices went up 100%. Some areas saw 60, 70%. Some areas, I would probably, I don't know, I don't have the data in front of me, but I would imagine the lowest was probably 10%. I think on average, it was like 17% per Zillow. And so if we adjusted it for what the actual real increase of rent was and adjusted it for the weighting, then just from that alone, inflation, CPI goes over to 15%, more than double what they're telling us. Now, why am I telling you this when I'm here talking about Bitcoin? Well, because inflation is the increase of the money supply. The money supply is what increases or inflates in volume, more money, not prices. Prices don't inflate. There's not more volume in the prices. And so when the Fed prints more money, it starts to cause all these problems and prices are going up. And this is exactly what Bitcoin fixes. So while you hear all this breaking news about the economy and about inflation and the Fed's trying to raise rates, the Fed, the central bank, is trying to artificially adjust the rates. That's what they're talking about. Artificially adjust the rates, artificially adjust the money supply. And they're trying to do both of those. Those are two different levers to adjust this inflation number, which is a lie. We're really over 15%. We're probably even higher than that. It depends on what your basket of goods. If we both, you and I, went to the grocery store, we would probably end up with different baskets full of goods, right? I'd buy different things than you, so then my inflation would be different than yours. So it's just insane to try to put a single number on this. But the key is that it's the Fed adjusting the monetary supply and the interest rates that cause the inflation to go up and down. And so if we can go to Bitcoin with a fixed monetary supply that can't be increased or decreased, then it can fix this inflation problem that we're having. Because Bitcoin has a fixed supply. So instead of being able to increase the money supply and decrease the money supply, Bitcoin is fixed. There will never be more than 21 million Bitcoin. That's it. At this time, there's been about, give or take, about 18.5-19 million have been brought into existence, but the cap will never be more than 21 million. Now, this doesn't matter which political party's in office or which agenda is there. It's written in code, and we should get to that point of 21 million by about the year 2140. So still quite a ways away, about 120 years away, before we have to worry about that. But because it can't be artificially increased, because it has that limited supply cap, that means instead of the price of goods and services going up, the value would accrue to the money, and the money would allow us to buy more goods and services in the future. Now, a lot of people say, but Mark, wait, hang on. Don't we need an expanding monetary supply? Don't we need inflation? Well, the banks have certainly told you that, so you keep voting for it. But let me just ask you a simple question. I'll answer a question with a question. Would you rather your money buy you more goods and services in the future or less? Well, I think the easy answer is, of course, you'd rather your money buy you more goods and services in the future. And so that's why you do not want an inflating currency. Inflation means that your goods and services will cost you more money in the future. And I know you're going, yeah, but I'll make more money. Not when adjusted for inflation. That's not been the case since 1970. I don't think it'll magically be that way now. Anyway, you're listening to the Mark Moss Show. We're talking about Bitcoin. I was reading to you the latest breaking news of the weekend so you can be up to date, so you know that the network is growing, the development is growing, so you can stay in the position, you can be in the Bitcoin position. Thanks so much for listening.